Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Medical Monday, June 8th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is Dr. Christopher Dibble, a cardiologist with St. Peter's Cardiology Associates. Dr. Dibble's practice encompasses all areas of non-invasive cardiology with a focus on cardiovascular prevention, as well as the evaluation and management of chest pain, shortness of breath, coronary artery disease, arrhythmias, heart failure, as well as other cardiac conditions. Now, ordinarily, at this point, I would give you the phone number to call. If you're a regular listener, you know the Vox Pop number. If you don't, go to the website, wamc.org, and check out the Vox Pop page. The number's right there. I don't want to confuse you. We're in a fun drive. You can also email your question, voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Christopher Dibble, and your calls or whatever, coming up. Well, hello again. Welcome back to the first ever live Vox Pop Fun Drive edition. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome on this Medical Monday Dr. Christopher Dibble, a cardiologist with St. Peter's Cardiology Associates. Dr. Dibble is board certified in cardiovascular disease with additional training in echocardiography, vascular ultrasound, and nuclear cardiology. His practice encompasses all areas of non-invasive cardiology with a focus on cardiovascular prevention, as well as the evaluation and management of chest pain, shortness of breath, coronary artery disease, arrhythmias, heart failure, as well as other conditions affecting the heart. Now, I'm not going to give you the phone number here. If you're a regular listener, feel free to call. Jim Mountier is ready to screen the calls, and we can put them on the air. I don't want to give the phone number because the fun drive is going. And you know that number, right? 800-323-9262. There are people ready to take your pledge right now. You can email this program if you have a cardiology question for Dr. Christopher Dibble. It's voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. Or if you must call, and that's fine, we would love some calls, you can go to the website and get the number there. It's on the VoxPop page at wamc.org, or it's probably written on your wall somewhere if you're listening. And again, the email is voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Christopher Dibble, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You had to march right through the fun drive room. We're having some construction done in the front office. So when you came in, you had to walk right through and you got to talk to Joe Donahue. How exciting was that?
Very. The team was very welcoming and you had quite the party going on in there.
It is kind of a party and it's fun. We have a lot of money to raise still for this fun drive. And again, you can make your pledge anytime you want at 800-323-9262. You know, Joe was talking. Well, let's talk about Joe's issue with AFib in a little bit. First of all, tell us what a non-invasive cardiologist does.
So most of the cardiologists that you would interact with would typically be a non-invasive cardiologist. You could sort of think of us as the primary care of cardiology. So I might see a patient who has shortness of breath or chest pain and then refer them to an invasive cardiologist who may need to put in a pacemaker or a stent or something like that. So non-invasive cardiology is the imaging specialists. We do stress tests, cardiac imaging, inpatient and outpatient consultation. So most of the consultative work done by cardiology is done by a non-invasive cardiologist. Then we refer to invasive people when you need something
so
invasive done.
I come to you with shortness of breath, and then someone says, all right, well, we better do some imaging. What are you going to do?
Typically, you'd get a stress test and maybe an ultrasound of your heart. We call an ultrasound of your heart an echocardiogram and get an idea of what the structure and function of your heart looks like. And then I might refer to a cardiac subspecialist based on what I found.
Our guest today is Dr. Christopher Dibble. Now, this is a live Vox Pop. You are welcome to call if you know the number. Feel free. Jim Mountier is ready to take your call. You can also email your question for Christopher Dibble at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. What can ultrasound tell us just from looking at a picture about the condition of the heart?
It could almost everything you need to know routinely, depending on how you use it. But it looks at the structure. So is the heart, are the valves normal? Do the valves leak? Are the valves blocked? The squeezing function of the heart, so how efficiently does it pump blood, and can give you a good idea why you're short of breath or sometimes why you're having chest pain. We can do what's called a stress echocardiogram, which is we have you run on a treadmill and then take pictures of the heart to see how the heart does when you exercise.
Well, how do you do that? If someone's on a treadmill, how are you taking pictures with ultrasound?
That's a great question. So people run on the treadmill, maybe 5 or 10 minutes. That's the stress part of the test. Then they quickly jump off, and we have and we take pictures of the heart to see what the heart looks like while you're exercising.
And these are still pictures.
No, it's a moving picture. We actually, a way to look at an echo, it's this exact same technology you use to image a baby. And so a lot of people are familiar with ultrasound. There's no radiation involved, and you get a real-time movie of what the heart's doing.
Is there any technology where you can, and maybe you don't have this, or maybe it doesn't exist because it's probably in my mind, a live picture while you're on the stress test, not after you're on the treadmill, but while you're on the treadmill?
So it's funny. In America, most of the stress tests are done where you exercise on a treadmill, then we take your pictures afterwards.
Yeah.
In Europe, a lot of the stress tests are done where you exercise on a recumbent bike, and I believe they take the pictures while you exercise.
So interesting.
And then there's also, that's kind of the routine way of doing it, but there are exercise studies that we do where people have their heart image. They're just not routinely used in clinical practice.
Dr. Christopher Dibble is our guest today from St. Peter's Cardiology Associates. Remember, the fun drive goes on. If you want to make your pledge, it's 800-323-9262. If you want a question on this program, you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. Or you can call the number, but I'm not going to give it on the air at this time. It'll just get too confusing. All right, the stress test, there are two kinds, right? There's the nuclear and the non-nuclear. What's the difference? Obviously, one's radioactive, but why is that better?
So the most basic type of stress test is to exercise on a treadmill while we do an EKG. That technology's been around for probably 70 years. You exercise and you see, and changes in the electrical signals from the heart can suggest that there's blockages. So that's a standard stress test that takes maybe 10 or 15 minutes, no radiation. Then for patients where you have a higher suspicion that they have blockages in the arteries, we give them, we do what's called a nuclear stress test. That person exercises on the treadmill. We inject a radioactive tracer. And then we take pictures of the heart after the exercise, and you can see relative perfusion of the heart. So you can see one wall gets not enough blood and other walls get enough blood. And then with the other benefit of a nuclear stress, so nuclear stress test, a little more accurate, a little more information. You also can do it for people who can't exercise. So I would say a significant percentage of people who come in for a stress test can't walk on a treadmill. Maybe they have orthopedic issues or balance issues. In those patients, you can give them a chemical stress and then do the nuclear picture so they don't need to do any exercise.
What's a chemical stress?
There's a couple different ways to do it. The simplest one is giving a medicine that speeds up your heart rate and often increases your blood pressure, and then we can take pictures after that.
Isn't that dangerous? If someone has a heart condition, hey, we're going to give you some uppers. Here you go.
There are risks to that. And then there's another one that's more commonly used where we give something that relaxes the blood vessels. And normal blood vessels relax, and diseased blood vessels do not.
Oh, interesting.
And then we image the differences in blood flow.
So this is because the calcium is so much on these blood vessels that they just will not relax?
Mm-hmm. And then we can see differences in blood flow to different areas of the heart and get a sense of what the arteries look like.
Our guest today is Dr. Christopher Dibble, a cardiologist with St. Peter's Cardiology Associates. If you have a question today, email it in. That's the easy way. voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email, voxpop@wamc.org. If you want to call, feel free. I would go to our website, wamc.org, get the VoxPop number there if you don't remember it already. Our fun drive is going on. It is the June drive. It's going very well indeed. We'll need your support, though. 800-323-9262. Volunteers are ready for your call right now. Let's talk quickly before the first break and before we head it over to Pledge Central, Dr. Dibble, about the EKG. You mentioned signals, electrical signals. How many different signals are there, and what are they? How are they different, and what are they each showing us?
So at the simplest, you can have what we call a one lead or kind of one signal. And that would be, almost what your iPhone watch is or your Apple Watch is doing, or maybe the the treadmill at the gym can read a signal from two points on your body.
Right.
Then you have a little more complicated ones where you get two or three signals at the same time. And then the one that we standardly the standard one is 12 leads. And so it's the same electrical signal. You're just measuring it from different angles.
So there's one signal that we're measuring here, but from different spots.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And what's the baseline for a healthy person? And then what happens to the signal? I assume voltage is what you're measuring. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yep.
But what happens? Does the voltage drop? Does it get higher? What are you reading?
There's an amazing number of heart conditions that can be diagnosed from the EKG. So you can diagnose arrhythmias. So the heart's, you know, the electrical signals will suggest the heart's not beating regularly, or you have an arrhythmia. So that would be a simple thing you can diagnose. You can diagnose inflammation of the heart. You can diagnose blocked arteries, because when the cells don't get enough blood, the electrical signals change. You can see absent electrical signals from a place where they should be, suggesting maybe you had a heart attack and that part of the heart is dead.
Ah.
So we actually can look at the EKG and say, wow, I don't see a signal from this wall of the heart. They must have had a heart attack there.
But if you have done an ultrasound, wouldn't that show that a section of the heart is dead?
Exactly. And so we'll often, if you have an abnormal EKG, we'll often go and do an ultrasound to go back and say, well, it looks abnormal on the EKG. How does it look on the ultrasound?
So the EKG comes first and then the ultrasound.
Yeah.
Our guest today is Dr. Christopher Dibble, and I won't give you the number, even though it's reflexive. It's Vox Pop. It's live. It's during a fun drive. And let's grab a couple emails here before we head over to Pledge Central. The number to call if you want to make a pledge is 800-323-9262. If you have a question for Dr. Christopher Dibble, email it, voxpop@wamc.org. Or if you know the number, Jim Mounthier is ready to screen your calls. And you can call the regular Vox Pop number and get in. This is from Lori in Enfield, Connecticut. Please share info on having a calcium score test. My dad had carotid artery issues, and I wonder if I should consider this test. Thanks for all. And that's from Lori in Enfield, Connecticut.
So calcium score, it's a great test, a commonly used test. It's a low-dose CAT scan. It's fast. There's no IV placed. And you get an idea of, is there plaque in the arteries? And so we had just talked about stress testing.
Yeah.
There's a continuum from maybe you smoke cigarettes when you're a teenager, so you have risk factors, you have high cholesterol or a family history that damages the arteries, to the arteries totally blocked and you have a heart attack. And so the idea is, we want to get you before you have that heart attack, before you have plaque in an artery that might cause an abnormal stress test. We want to get you early when the plaque's growing, before it's even obstructed the artery or caused any trouble. And so plaque, as it happens, causes calcification in the walls of the artery, and a calcium score is a low-dose CAT scan that can pick that up early before there's any damage done to the heart and allow us to treat it.
Our guest today is Dr. Christopher Dibble, and we'll take a break here and remind you how this show and all the shows here continue, and it's with your support. It's 800-323-9262. If you want to make your pledge, you can email this program. If you have a question, we will come back. voxpop@wamc.org is the email. We'll be back after we check in with the affable folks over in Pledge Central. You know, it really is a great time to make that challenge. You can call 1-800-323-9262 and make your pledge for the thing that you like best about WAMC. Don't worry about the stuff you don't like. Maybe you don't want to hear my voice. Boy, am I with you. But if you like something, pledge for that. 800-323-9262. All right, we're back on this live Medical Monday Vox Pop edition with Dr. Christopher Dibble from St. Peter's Cardiology Associates. You having fun? This is a little weird, right?
Yeah, it's great.
It's okay. You mentioned the apps, the EKG apps, and I don't have one. We walked by Joe Donahue, and he's got an AFib app, which I assume is similar to that. But these EKG apps, they're big business now. Are they any good? Do they do any good?
I think they're helpful if you have a cardiac problem and your doctor advises you to use it in a certain way. I think that a lot of time, they're certainly generating a lot of work for me, and that people will wear them. They'll get triggered on this, that, the other thing, and then come in to be seen.
So the hypochondriacs will race in after the app sets off.
Oh, yes. But I think if you're a
cha-ching, eh?
I think if you're a person at high risk for atrial fibrillation, they're probably useful.
So is that the same as what Joe had, the AFib?
I believe so.
Okay.
And I think it depends on sort of how high your risk is and how accurate the algorithm is and the particular device. There's been a bunch of clinical trials evaluating this, and I suspect we'll have better recommendations as years go on.
And then, you know, we were talking in the break about blood pressure testing. And, you know, my former boss had some hypochondria issues. And he, during the fund drives in his later years, would have a blood pressure cuff with him. I'm not talking out of school because we were on the air and he was taking it. You said if you don't do everything just right, the blood pressure test means next to nothing.
Well, so there's a couple rules, and if you break any of the rules, your blood pressure will be higher than what it should be, or you'll measure it falsely high. So you should be seated, your feet should be supported, your back should be supported, your arms should be supported, you should not be talking, and your legs should be uncrossed. And if you, each of those things, if you're kind of doing it wrong, will raise your blood pressure a little bit. And a lot of, and the most important is you should be resting for about 10 minutes.
Well, he never stopped talking, so that was a disqualifier right away.
So a lot of people don't measure their blood pressure accurately.
But it wouldn't be better to be lying down?
Well, you'll get a different number then. So most of our recommendations for treatment are based on sort of ambulatory seated blood pressures. If you had lying down blood pressures, you would need different targets.
Our guest today is Dr. Christopher Dibble, a cardiologist with St. Peter's Cardiology Associates. And I'm not going to give the Vox Pop number today. You can call. Jim Mountier is ready to screen the calls if you know the number, or if you go to WAMC.org, hit the Vox Pop page. The number is right there. You can call if you want. You can email, though, voxpop@WAMC.org, and we have a few of those. Before we get to our emails, want to ask you about statins. We talk about reducing cholesterol and how important that is. Is there data? Is there a growing amount of data that says, oh, yeah, statins are great for reducing cholesterol, but they also help stop cardiovascular events? That's what I'd be worried about.
Yes. And so, and I guess stepping back a little bit, when we give you anything to treat heart disease, what makes medicine a scientific discipline is it's based in research. So I'm not prescribing a statin or another medication for you to lower your cholesterol. I'm prescribing it because I know it reduces cardiovascular events, heart attacks and stroke. So the people who have the biggest benefit are those who have already had a heart attack and stroke. The next group would be people who they have a smaller benefit if they have high cholesterol. So yes, they decrease events. And there's been lots of medications that lower cholesterol but do not improve your cardiovascular outcomes. So it's the outcomes that we really are looking for.
Why do you think some people can't tolerate certain statins but can tolerate others?
Oh, that's a great question. They're metabolized differently. So they're metabolized differently and they're chemically different. So some of them dissolve. You know, you can look at it. You know, we can look at medication, sort of how things dissolve easier in water or oil. Some statins are sort of more oil friendly and some are more water friendly. And then you also have enzymes that break down statins and everyone's metabolizes them a little differently. So if you don't tolerate one statin, it's common to try two or three others. And often you'll find one that works.
I'm not going to give our number. I almost did it. It's the fund drive, boys and girls. If you want to call a number, call our volunteers and make a pledge. 800-323-9262. You can email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. And before tomorrow's birding show, if you want to call in, just go to the website, write that number down, and you can feel free to call tomorrow. But now, before we go to our emails, and we have several, I just want to talk to you about GLP-1s. They're everywhere now. Weight loss medicines are everywhere. Is there a cardiology benefit for this?
A big benefit. And so what's interesting is most cardiologists have not prescribed weight loss medicines prior to GLP-1. So there have been weight loss medicines on the market since the 90s. But what's changed with GLP-1s is they lower your cardiovascular risk. So
do you know why? I know weight loss is a factor, but is there any other reason?
Well, the cardiovascular benefits are somewhat independent of the weight loss.
No way.
So some of the older GLP-1s, you lose less weight, but you have the same cardiovascular benefits. I don't think we fully understand it, but they're doing more than helping you lose weight. They're making your body more sensitive to insulin. They're decreasing inflammation. And then there's a host of other things that they do, you know, kind of with the weight loss, which is lower blood pressure, lower cholesterol, lower waist circumference. And we know all of those things correlate to your mortality, with your mortality. So, you know, bigger waist circumference, higher cardiovascular mortality, for example.
Now, I don't want to appear skeptical, and I'm a man of prolific poundage myself, but do we know all the long-term effects of GLP-1s? Are you fine with the way things are and the amount of information we have about the effects and side effects of GLP-1s, considering most people are going to have to take them forever?
I think we have a pretty good handle on it. And, you know, it's going to come down to risk benefit. So how much overweight are you and what's your cardiovascular risk? But a lot of people don't realize the first GLP came on the market in 2005, the first GLP medication. And we've been using them pretty steadily since then. What's new is using them for weight loss and using higher doses. So I think we have a pretty good handle on it, but you know, anytime a large number of people are exposed to something, you're going to learn new things. So, you know, we learned with COVID, the whole planet got it, and you saw all kinds of unusual things. And so there's still something to learn, I think.
I've been waiting for more data, but I'll surely drop dead before I get enough data to take it. Diane writes in from North Adams. I just had a heart CT with contrast in preparation for a Watchman device to prevent clots from reaching my brain. The scan shows left anterior coronary artery calcified plaque with mild stenosis mid-vessel. Can you please translate what that means? I'm an 80-year-old woman in normally good health, and that's from Diane in Massachusetts.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack there.
Okay, well, we have a few minutes. Go ahead.
That could be a long office visit. But so stepping back, a device in the heart to prevent clots. We call that a Watchman, and it's for people who have atrial fibrillation. So when you get atrial fibrillation, it's a common cause of stroke, and you take a blood thinner. Some people can't tolerate or don't want a blood thinner, and so we can do this thing called a Watchman. So that's the first thing. Then she had a CT scan in preparation for the Watchman, which is standard to get the anatomy of the heart and see where we're going to put the device. And on that CT scan, there was what we call an incidental note of plaque in one of the three main arteries that supplies blood to the heart. That artery, I think she said, was the LAD. And so when we speak of plaque and arteries to the heart, those are the arteries that get bypassed when you get bypass surgery. They're the arteries that get stents when you get stents. And they're the arteries that we're looking at when you do a calcium score. So what she had on that CAT scan was essentially an abnormal calcium score, like we were talking about earlier in the show. What she doesn't know is there just plaque in the artery, or is there plaque in the artery in that it's blocked? And so you don't know the significance of that plaque, but there's plaque, and that means she probably needs to lower her cholesterol, work on reducing her cardiovascular risk factors, and maybe consider having a stress test.
Now, the stenosis is different from a blockage. I thought stenosis was a narrowing of the vessels.
Oh, it is. Maybe I misheard.
No, I'm going by her email.
Yes, a stenosis is a blockage in the artery. So it sounds like on this test, they actually know not only is there plaque, that the artery is blocked.
Our guest today is Dr. Christopher Dibble, cardiologist with St. Peter's Cardiology Associates. Linda writes, "Hello, I had a heart attack last year with two stents inserted and have been on 180 milligrams Brilinta per day and an aspirin as well as Losartan for blood pressure and atorvastatin, and now having issues with liver and kidney blood work as well as painful muscle and joint pain. Will I ever be able to wean myself off those meds?" That's from Linda, not me.
Yes, so there's a lot there as well. I would say, so you have to look at what the causes of each of those problems are. And so for the liver and the joint aches, for example, the statin is suspicious, but certainly may not be the problem. It might be. And there are lots of statin alternatives. So there are lots of other medications we can use if you cannot tolerate a statin. We know from clinical trials, a couple percent of people cannot tolerate a statin. It's not a huge number, but they're definitely out there.
Somebody I knew had terrible cramps, leg cramps from a statin. Went to the doc and said, "Hey, listen, it's not working out." And the doc said, "Okay, we're going to give you a different one, but I want you to go on a month of CoQ10 before that." What does CoQ10 do, and how could that help?
So the issue with statins in muscles is the enzyme that statins work on is also present in your muscle, and it blocks a step in muscle metabolism. And coenzyme Q10 is an enzyme that works in the same pathway that kind of gets around the statin block. Now, we used to use that all the time, and it's been we used to think it was effective for reducing muscle aches. There have been blinded clinical trials that have not shown it to be effective. So it's no longer in our guidelines as a routine thing. Although I think there may be some patients who feel better on it.
Oh, could it be just psychosomatic that they think, oh, okay, I'll feel better on this and I'm feeling better?
We call that the placebo effect.
Yeah, that's the thing. Right. Yeah. So that's why you're the doctor. Andrea, go ahead.
But it could also, it's possible that it's beneficial and just the clinical trials didn't find it because they weren't large enough or long enough or done well. And so there are, patients who feel better on that, and it's hard to say why.
Andrea writes in, my partner had a calcium CR test result of ivermectin 400. He later had a valve replaced and an aneurysm repaired. Can he reduce that high test number with diet or meds? And that's from Andrea.
So calcium score, that's a great question. One of the, I'd say almost every single time I see a patient with an elevated calcium score, they ask me, well, it's elevated. When do I get it checked again? And actually, current recommendations are do not recheck it again. It doesn't go down. It doesn't go down. You learn that you have elevated cardiovascular risk. You treat the risk, and changes in the number don't mean a lot, and don't change how you treat the patient. So usually, you do it once, and then the costs of the test and the repeated radiation exposure is not worth the information you get.
Our guest is Dr. Christopher Dibble, a cardiologist with St. Peter's Cardiology Associates. I won't give you the number now. The fund drive is ongoing. It's a $1.25 million drive. The volunteers are over there in Pledge Central. They would love to hear from you. You can call them, 800-323-9262. I think I heard Lucas say there was a challenge on the table. So let's make that challenge. We have about 7 minutes left here. Quickly, before the next email, and you still have time to get in if you want, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org is the email. Quickly, calcium and arteries. As I understand it, there's basically some that's on the inside and some that's on the outside. Which is more dangerous?
You mean calcium in the blood?
No, on the inside of the arterial tubes or whatever, and also on the outside.
Well, when we measure it, we don't... You don't get a different number for inside or outside the artery. So that's not really something we look at.
It's not more dangerous to have it on the outside where everything is really not maybe blocked, but there's no flexibility in the vessel at all.
It's not really an important distinction.
Why is there nothing that will soften it up and remove the calcium? Why is there no med that'll do that?
It's a little bit like, why can't I give you a med to get rid of your arthritis? It's a degenerative process, and calcium's kind of like rock. It's hard to remove. Maybe someday there will be, but you get calcium everywhere. You get older, it gets in your joints, it's in the blood vessels. And actually, I guess the important thing here is that what you're asking me is I hear all the time. And the important distinction here is I don't care if there's calcium in your artery. I care that it doesn't block up, that the plaque doesn't rupture and cause a heart attack. So when I see patients with an elevated calcium score, I'm usually saying, okay, this isn't causing a problem. We just need it not to get any worse. And when it gets worse, a lot of people have this conception that the artery is going to go 10% blocked, 20% blocked, 30% blocked, then you get to 100 and it's closed and you die.
Good night, yes.
Yeah, but what happens is it's the biology of the vessel wall that's more important. So is there inflammation, and what does that plaque look like? Because it's a 10 or 20% plaque with a little bit of calcium that ruptures and a blood clot forms, and then you have a heart attack. So we don't need the calcium to get better or go away. We just need it not to have a blood clot form there.
This email is from Bob, and Bob is glad you're back on the air. So Bob must have heard your other appearances here. It's been a while, but
10 years
all right,
ago.
Dr. Dibble. Bob writes, atorvastatin and Repatha SureClick. Why am I taking both of these medications? If one is not sufficient, the other should suffice. Is the generic unreliable due to distribution inspection shortcuts?
Okay, so there's a lot there too. So I will say, traditionally America's generic supply has been very reliable, and I've seen things recently, kind of more in the mainstream media, that we're not doing as well with it. And so I with our inspections of generic meds. Not something I'm an expert on. So, but there is definitely maybe some changes there. In terms of why would you take Repatha and atorvastatin? One, they were studied together. So some people don't get an adequate, maybe 10% of people do not get an adequate response to atorvastatin, and Repatha is going to lower their cholesterol further. So, you know, the people who get something, the people who get other cholesterol meds either need more than the statin can provide, or they're intolerant to a statin and just using it as an alternative.
You think it's common
to do both.
Are you comfortable with the level of meds most patients get nowadays for these type of things? Are they over-medicated?
That's a great question. I see both. I see people on with absurd medication lists, and sometimes there are older people who just the meds have accumulated and no one's thought is this really needed? And then I see alternatively people with pretty advanced cardiovascular disease that's being undertreated. That you know, I look and I'm like, wow, this person's probably going to die of their heart disease at some point, and we're doing almost nothing.
Do you say that to your patients? Hey, you're probably going to die. No, seriously.
It's true of all of us.
No, but what I mean is, do you say, listen, you have to do something now, and we might not even be able to do anything? You're toast.
I don't think I say you're toast that often.
Okay. You should try that. It's very direct. It'll work.
I'll say you've suggested it. I do try to give – I think it's important to give people an idea of, one, your degree of certainty. So, hey, I'm going to suggest this, and I'm sure this is helpful, or I think it might be helpful. And then, two, how important it is. So I think you want to know that when you see a doctor.
Well, you know, we're out of time. Dr. Christopher Dibble of St. Peter's Cardiology Associates. That was kind of an odd show. We broke it up for some fundraising. You're a good sport. Maybe you come back one of these years.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Now, I've been handed a note. We have only $1,019 to go to unlock $3,000 in this fund drive. I encourage you to make your call. 800-323-9262. We're trying to get to the $1,050,000 mark in this drive. Oh, it's almost over, people. Now, thanks again to Dr. Christopher Dibble of St. Peter's for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to the gang over in Pledge Central and all the volunteers. Riley, is it Turner? Riley Turner? Phillips, yeah, I knew that, right? Riley Phillips, our engineer. Well done. Jim Mountier screened the calls, and we had none because the fund drive number is quite different. Now, tomorrow on the show, it's going to be Boyd's with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. It'll be another live show. Jot the number down. We will take calls tomorrow. We'll take emails. It's going to be fun. Keep pledging, folks. This station can't do it without you. 800-323-9262.